Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for their members. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Tri-Tip Roast, Untrimmed Twin Pack, just $4.99 per pound. Signature Farms Boneless Skinless Chicken Breasts, Thighs or Wings, buy one get one free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. Progresso Soup, 18 to 19 ounce selected varieties, buy two get four free when you buy six. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
This is Danny and Dusty.
Meringue Tang is going to be a thing.
You're not coining anything new.
With Danny Meringue and Dusty, the Fan Man Hera.
All throws with monkey sounds in there and called go.
The old Danny Meringue pie.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080.
Yeah, this is going to be awesome.
The Fan.
Oh, I'm back. I've got half a voice. No Dusty Hero. He's staying in California. He's having some good times, but I don't know if that's the case. We'll get to that here in a little bit. Jordan Schultz over here with me. Will Ortner behind the glass.
What's going on, man? Happy New Year.
Thank you. Thank you. Happy New Year to everybody else out there. Hopefully you sound much better than I do. Hope you feel better than I do.
I mean, your voice sounds a lot better than it did. And in the lieu of Dusty not being here, guess what? I am another Salty Ducks fan, so you can have a lot of conversation about, you know, what went wrong or why went wrong. Or you could just torture me all day here, you know, on the Vancouver Ford text line or on the YouTube chat. Please take your shots, okay? It's welcome.
We'll get to the game, and that's going to carry most of the day today. Obviously, we'll talk about the Arizona State Texas game, which was incredible. I should say it was incredible for 10 minutes. What happened in New Orleans yesterday, and why the game's being played today between Notre Dame and Georgia?
Just awful.
Do a minor little Blazers check in, and for all the people like, I don't want to talk Blazers. They're playing the Lakers, man. Deal with it.
Was a big rivalry at one point.
I mean, it's still, you know, people still mildly care at least about that.
Now, it just sucks that NBA rivalries in general don't seem to really get the juice that they used to. But yeah, I mean, I remember like beat LA really being a big deal back.
I mean,
you know,
I think when the Lakers come to town, I mean, you'll still get that
for sure.
But it's going to be interesting. Certainly a lot to talk about today. Everybody's New Year's go well. Does anybody actually do anything? Is that a thing that happens?
I don't know. Will's younger than me. I stayed home. I had to work New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. So my old ass just, my wife and I snuggled up, ordered Thai, and watched a couple Christmas movies. It was fun.
I guess, as soon as I got off air, I ran to the bar. I bolted to the bar. Look, I'm trying to be older, but there are some things that I'm
just
still younger at.
Pull you back in.
That's right. I went and got the boys, and we went to the bar. Yeah. I was fine.
Yeah, I looked at my wife, I was like, do you want to do anything? And she said, no, God, no. We watched a couple episodes of the Harry Potter baking show.
Oh, that is good. Yeah, Max, yeah.
My wife's a big Harry Potter fan.
Are you making butter beer? What's happening?
No, they make these giant, like, Harry Potter-inspired, like, dessert sculptures.
Oh, like, so you're making, like, Hagrid, but as, like, a funnel cake.
Basically, sort of.
Sort of, okay. Yeah. It's pretty good. It's a lesser. Do you know who Omari Gushon is? The chocolatier?
No.
I don't watch cooking shows. No. Like, this guy's all over IG. Like, he's got a couple million followers.
He has a huge algorithm. Yeah, he has a Netflix show, all kinds of stuff.
So, like, he's the one that does like the photorealistic chocolate stuff.
Makes it look absolutely perfect.
It's insane.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, what are you doing here? It's not quite to that level. Like, he's like the apex of this, but they brought in like a bunch of big time Harry Potter fans and like took them to the studio in London, the Warner Brothers studio out there where they have the whole setup. And they took some chocolatiers and some pastry chefs. And it's not like Well, I should say they have some like self-trained and self-taught, but it's
It's basically everybody from the baking circuit of shows that's on Food Network and Max that you're already watching.
So it's like it's like a bunch of people have a like very, very high level schooling Absolutely. And education around it. And then there's just some people that are self-taught that are incredible at it.
One of the winners of Is It Cake competed in the show, actually.
Yes. But you know, it's I like it just because I am, you know, quote unquote gifted when it comes to music.
Yeah.
Like I've played seven different instruments in my life. Like I can do all of that.
That is gifted.
I can't draw to save my life. Like a stick figure is as far as it goes. I've tried to be like, well, if you do this and this, like I don't have the patience or the understanding. Like my brain does not compute that stuff, like how to do it. So when I watch somebody take cake and turn it into the phoenix from Harry Potter.
Yeah.
And you're sitting there going, okay. Like they're carving chocolate to make it look photorealistic. And I'm just sitting there going, okay, that's pretty cool.
And they spent like 10, 12 hours on this grandiose.
Not even that. It's half that time. They're doing okay, this in
That was the finale.
But I'm saying like they're doing like 4 and 6 hours. I'm like, bro, I don't think I could bake like a normal birthday cake in 4 hours and like have it like just frost it and make it look decent. And these people are building like 10 layer cakes with all of these different, you know, layer frostings, whatever you call the middles.
So intricate.
And then
the fillings, is that
yeah,
what you're
fillings.
Getting
at? Yeah, fillings. Yeah, there you go. And then they also do like a sculpture out of it.
And they like, have a tasting element along, like a little tiny, like, you know, petit four, a little bite for people to have too. Like, it's crazy. It's got everything.
Yeah, it's just, again, like, I know we've gone off the rails already, but like, maybe this is me being old. I'm like, but that's my New Year's now. And I looked at my wife and it was like, I was like 20, oh, Scott, I must have military time. It was like 11:30. And I was like, are you going to stay up for this? She's like, just nudge me.
That's
I'm like,
hilarious.
Like, I'm 40. That's what a New Year's looks like now.
Like,
I don't
know that.
I don't know what kind of thing, like if you're, you know, over 40, if you're over 40 and you're still doing the New Year's thing, both props to you and also seek help. Seek help. I remember when I was younger, I used to see the 40-year-old, I was like 25, 26, I'd be at the bar. I'd see the 40-year-old dude in the black t-shirt and the chain, shaved head, you know.
Like single guy?
Single guy.
Okay,
or
not
divorced
not
guy,
couples.
Ed Hardy guy, you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah, Ed Hardy.
And I was like, that guy's still going hard. Like, yeah, I see that guy, and I'm like, oh, man, that man is in a dark place.
Like, bro, it doesn't work on the 20-year-olds anymore. The Me Too movement has kind of moved past y'all, like in those 40 to 50-year-old ranges in Ed Hardy shirts.
It's a dark place. Like, when you went out.
I feel old when I go out, and I'm 27.
Like, I was going to say, like,
I feel old.
Did you look around the room and go, oh, this is a little different?
I have that moment. I have that realization, like, almost every time I go to the bar now. There's a lot of, like, I don't want to be in this bar.
Right.
This kind of, like, 3 years ago, hey, we're packed in. Everyone's dancing. Oh.
Yeah, let's go.
I'm feeling everybody
I started looking around, and I was like, I kind of don't want to be here right now. I'd like to be somewhere where it's a little bit quieter. I'd like to not have to wait to buy an overpriced drink.
Mm-hmm.
You still did it.
Still did it.
Look, man, I'm right there with you.
Not washed yet.
28. 28 was when it was like, oh, no. I don't want
to
be here.
You don't want to be hip to hip, feeling up everybody's like bodies on yours and just like not able to move anywhere.
You just start getting you just kind of like, give me my space.
Hey, well, hey, bubbles.
Not a public touch guy either. Like, leave me alone. Don't.
Was there ever a point in your life?
Touch me.
In the last, I say, 6 years, when you were at the bars.
Okay.
Because I know this is the thing that doesn't happen anymore. Do you guys dance?
I don't dance because I'm not good at dancing.
I mean, like,
but yes, people dance.
People still do?
I still go out dancing.
No, I had a person come up to me and be like, it's going to be great. I'm going to dance with you. And it's like, cool. I can't dance. That's fine. Don't worry. I'll lead. She was great at it. Mm. I was not.
Okay. But so it does still happen. It's not because...
Yeah.
I think social media and like the photos that I've seen from the club scene over the last couple of years, even like pre-COVID, was like... It was more about being there than actually like doing things. Because like when we were young, or at least I say when I was younger, number one, cell phones with cameras weren't really a thing.
Right.
Like that. Like they were, but... We didn't take pictures of everything. We had the disposable cameras that
we didn't
developed.
Pull them out.
Yeah.
Every moment.
No. And so, like, you could make a fool of yourself and like go on the dance floor and you know, go hit on a woman that was way outside your league. Like those.
I mean, that still happens. Dudes are still going up to girls. Yeah, dudes are still going up to hots and being like, come on now.
Yeah,
like,
that's just...
Okay.
It does just get documented.
That's never not going to stop.
That's the thing. Like,
the dancing isn't happening. Dancing isn't happening for the most part.
From what I've seen, dudes aren't going up anymore because I see it all over social media of like dudes getting clowned for it. And so dudes are not doing it.
You do get... You 100% do get clowned for it if you go up and fail, but... Dudes are still going up and talking.
Good.
Guys are gonna want.
Good.
Guys want
a little liquid courage, but it's happening.
Yes.
Okay.
There's probably more like precursor to when you were younger and going to bars. Like I feel like probably when you were going to bars, you just like, I've never seen this person before. They're really attractive. I'm gonna go up and talk to them. Where now there's like, dude, I followed that girl on IG, or I saw her on Hinge. Like, I'm going to go say something now. Like, we matched on Hinge, but we never talked to each other. I'm going to go talk to her now. So maybe that's more of it. But no, people aren't dancing unless you for sure know how to dance. Then those people are dancing a lot.
Okay, a response quickly. By the way, a little bonus for the Harry Potter talk. Go Google Ivana Lynch. You're welcome to every dude out there that's listening right now. Because, the one that played Luna Lovegood, she's a hot. Absolutely a hot. And there might be some good pictures on the internet of her, just saying. Two, the penchant to dance, I feel like, still exists. I'm 36 almost here in February, but... Hell, I mean, my wife and I went out like probably once or twice a month to, it's the one attached to the Crystal Ballroom, Lola's, that little bar inside of the Crystal Ballroom. They do like themed, like, you know, 90s or 2000s or 2010s, like music on Fridays and Saturdays. So okay. My wife and I go quite a bit, and there seems to be not just like the olds out there, but like young people, Will's age or younger as well. So like it does still seem to be a thing. It's just maybe Will's not going to the places where they're dancing. I mean, hell, I used to go to like Dixie Tavern all the time. I just
stopped.
The
thing is, like, there's not. Are there many of those bars in downtown Portland anymore?
Yeah, there's Dixie. Yeah. There's Barrel Room. There, I mean, there's
Dixie's
that,
is there.
Yeah, that
you
whole
that whole area
bars,
around
yeah.
Dixie's.
On second,
there are
second and third. Yeah.
There's dances.
Okay,
there's spots where you can go dance. There's spots in Vancouver.
Because that was the thing. Like you had like 7 or 8 clubs that were there when I was that age. Like I've gone down there a couple times, like for, you know, either post game or something like that, like especially during the playoffs, you know, in like 2019, there's a bunch of national media and stuff like, well, you know, let's go out and let's go get crazy. And I'm like, well, there's not really much. You know, I was like, I remember like McFadden's, which is gone now.
Yeah.
Dixie's, I guess, not new anymore, but it was newer.
Dixie's is still there. Dixie's is still kicking. But also,
still doing
like,
the same thing.
I'm on the other side of the river, too. I'm not driving into Portland every weekend. Like,
well,
that's not
like,
happening. It's
that's
like
what
a
we
special
used to do.
Occasion.
Like, when I lived in Tualatin and Tigard, like, we on a Friday night, you'd draw straws, somebody's driving.
Right.
And then we'd load up the cars, and, you know, we'd ride like three SUVs deep down there. And that's like, that was the thing that you'd do.
Well, do y'all think too that like do you think like social media and like, you know, mixology kind of being a thing now that people do at home and making your own drinks is kind of like a fun thing to try to copy people doing on social media and people getting millions of views of people watching that kind of crap? Like, wouldn't that be maybe a reason to stay home instead of go out? Because walking outside of a bar, what, a week ago, I heard 3 ladies that probably 5, 6, 7 years ago would have been like, oh, I think I'm going to go to another bar. Instead, they're like, hey, I got a bunch of stuff to make some good drinks at home. And they all grabbed an Uber and went back to her place. I mean, it just seems like there's that option more now in 2024 than there ever has been. So
thank you for text line 503-864-6326. As a 40-year-old with kids, once every plus or minus 5 years, we do a couple's New Year's Eve party, and it takes me the entire 5 years to recover just from that. Headed back out to the Pearl on New Year's Eve sounds nowadays like a ring of hell. And yeah, that's kind of what, look, I'm at Blazer games all the time, you know, 41 times a year. Like, I'm around 20,000 people.
And means you're out till midnight, too, each time.
Yeah, I mean, I'm out late, you know, I get home at 1:30, you know, pretty regularly. Tonight, it will be very late because the Lakers game won't tip off until like 7:50, and I hate them. But, like, the idea of, like, being around people for a game versus being around a bunch of people that are drunk and stupid, I just want no part of it.
I'm getting older on that. I'm getting more on that line of thinking.
Like, it's a level of grumpiness?
It happens if, I had someone the other day that just kept poking me. And, like, they were, you know, like, when someone's, like, drunk,
what,
and they just keep poking
hold on,
you.
Hey.
and they're talking to you. And at some point, I just had to be like, look, dude, I think your mullet is stupid. You need to leave me alone. Go away from me right now, or we're going to have an issue. And so, yeah, grumpy Will is starting to happen. Old yell at clouds, get off my lawn, Will. He's coming into fruition, and it's going to be a problem for me later on.
A guy with a mullet trying to poke Will. Shocking.
It wasn't me.
No, it wasn't you. He was very excited to tell me how tall he thought I was, and then he didn't like it when I told him that I was only 5'11".
Mm. Well, and not to go too dark, but my wife and I have always talked about...
Who's the real D-hole here?
The guy who came up and poked me. Okay. He walked up and started poking me in the chest. He's the problem. Don't victim blame me.
No, but you better pull that. No, and not to get too dark with it here, but like my wife and I have always talked about doing a New Year's Eve celebration on Bourbon Street, you know, and so after that tragic event that happened, it just kind of makes my wife and I want to stay home. Like not just avoid Bourbon Street, but just be like, you know what, should we just never leave the house? I think we've got our hot tub here, got a nice big television. We'll just have all the groceries delivered. I think I'm fine.
Did you guys watch any of the actual New Year's Eve shows?
Like I did.
Like the ball?
I haven't watched one in years. I'm like I said, I'm in the bar.
They kind of suck.
I literally flipped over. I looked at my phone and kind of like nudged my wife. Like, hey, you know, hey, time to get up. And I was like, do you want something to drink? She's like, no, I'm good. I'm good. I was like, all right, fine.
Yeah, we had hot cocoa.
Ooh. Yeah, but we literally flicked it on for like, the 45-second countdown.
Was it the Seacrest one or the CNN one?
It was the Seacrest one because I've got YouTube TV and I just went to the live and it's the first channel.
There you go.
Bloop. There you go. We're watching that one. And it was like, why are the ghosts of TLC and Carrie Underwood on the show right now? It was very strange.
They were doing some weird stuff on
I was like, but I had no interest in watching it. Like, New Year's Eve is, to me, the most overrated holiday. I want nothing to do with it.
Well, because usually you could go in thinking, oh, hey, like, we can have this perfect night where everybody's going to, like, get, you know, super messed up and somebody's going to get laid. Somebody that didn't get kissed all year is going to get kissed and we're all going to have a really fun time. And then it ends up just being an absolute dumpster fire for everybody and you all end up separated. It just sounds much better, you know, kind of chilling out. I think I'm on that.
Now, speaking of sounding better than it actually was, the Oregon Ducks took on the Ohio State Buckeyes in the Rose Bowl, and it was over before it started. We'll get into it. We'll open it up the text line, let Duck fan vent. We'll dive in and out of it, and we'll kind of get going from there. Danny Dusty, Danny the Fan.
Hey, guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting the NFL playoffs, buckle up. Betting football's hard enough as it is. We're doing the research for you, so listen to Cash the Ticket with Mike Valeni and I. We'll be dropping new episodes for every single playoff game, and that's going to be storylines leading into it, so some good football stuff, but also the betting nuggets you're looking for. Sides, totals, trends, player props, throw those in there too. Pre-game and post-game, we're going to be all over the postseason. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and Portland's sports leader, 1080, The Fan.
This music's probably a little bit too upbeat for this next segment.
The lyrics are pretty accurate, though.
I mean, the facts of life is that Oregon got absolutely annihilated. And every single level, the final score does no justice to how big of an ass-kicking that was. And again, I know I'm a USC guy, and I know I talk on the Ducks all the time. You can ask Dusty. I wanted the Ducks to win. I did. And for mostly selfish reasons, because the Ducks doing better, it's good for us here. It's good for Dusty. You know, I'm about that. You know, if they keep going on, they win a national title, what's good for the Goose is good for the Gander. Part of it was, I was like, I'm so sick and tired of arrogant Duck fan. I wanted you to win just so you actually had something to be arrogant about. And you can call it petty and call it whatever you want. I was like, look, man, it was like, oh, you're arrogant USC fan. I'm like, yeah, USC fans, Alabama fans, Michigan fans, Notre Dame fans, teams that have won for 50, 60, 70 years, have double-digit national titles, have, you know, one of the highest winning percentages in the entire sport, have shaped the sport over its entire history. Yeah. We're arrogant. It's earned.
It is. But really quickly, I think Duck fan, in the last 25 years, there is no team that has risen farther to the top or to the, you know,
no, not even upper echelon of college
football than Oregon in the history of college football.
They're the only one that's knocked on the door. And they're the only, like, the next team is Boise State. That's the only other, like, team that has, like, come from the ashes and been like, put themselves in a no BS conversation over 20 years.
Got to a national championship in the old BCS format, got to one in the college football playoff format. Like, they've gotten a lot done. They just haven't won it all yet.
Yep. And that's where you start here and then work your way back into the game.
Yeah.
This is not a bad season for Oregon. It's not a bad season. It's not. You were the number one ranked team. You beat Ohio State at home. You saw growth from Dane Lanning and his staff. There's a million different things to celebrate. You can acknowledge that it was a good season, one of Oregon's best seasons, and still say yes that they fell short because you were the undefeated number one team in the nation, and you didn't get it done. And you can say, oh, it's, you know, you're USC guy, blah, blah, blah. You didn't win. And you not only did you not win, you got embarrassed on national TV again. And for the again, yes, again, it's happened again. And for all of the, I want recognition for what we've done. You get recognition when you win. You can acknowledge that the program has made substantial gains. And you were absolutely right. But you, for all of the, we want to be talked about like Michigan. We want to be talked about like Alabama, like Georgia. They've got titles. That's where this stops. That's where, like, you can have both series of thoughts. Both are true. Oregon has made unbelievable gains in 20 years. To come from where they are, or from where they were to where they are, there's no doubt. You cannot argue that. They are a national power. They are. Dusty and I talked about this probably 2 months ago. The idea of becoming a blue blood, and who is a blue blood. Oregon is the only team that isn't a blue blood that is in the conversation of being a blue blood. And then we start talking about, like, is LSU a blue blood? Is Florida State a blue blood? Is Florida a blue blood? And you start going down, it's like, multiple national titles, multiple national titles, multiple national titles. Like, yeah, I guess they are. Oregon is the only one that's on the outside looking in when you're talking about the national title. But they're also the only one that from 2003 on has been consistently good. I mean, that's... If you look at what they have done over the last 21 years.
Yeah, minus like two seasons, yeah.
They have been one of the four, five best programs in the country. But they're also the only one in that group that doesn't have that title.
And that's something that, you know, I think Duck fans, like you were saying, you know, just having something finally to lean on and to tell, you know, the Washington detractors, which, hell, they really don't even have anything to lean on either when they're talking about beating Oregon twice last year. But it's that big game mentality that Oregon just... can't seem to overcome. There's something about these situations, and you don't know what it is. Like, and I guess you really got to look at this one individually, as opposed to, I don't really want to compare this to, like, losses against Washington that Dan Lanning has had before, trouble in big games that Dan Lanning has had. This is a new situation for Oregon, and frankly, this was a tough situation from the get-go, right? Like, Oregon literally, it's hard to blame the coaches here, because Oregon didn't even have a chance to get going. Their coaches didn't even have a chance to work in any of the cool plays or the schemes that Will Stein had spent a month drawing up, because the players didn't allow them to do so. Three and out to start the game on offense. And for Ohio State, it was two very quick drives. I think the first drive was 3 plays, 75 yards. The next one, 2 plays. It was just that. Oregon fans didn't even have a chance to breathe. And so you look at, like, okay, big game fail again, but this was maybe more in the preparation side of things, sure, but it's hard for me to look at, okay, it's Dan Lanning's fault. I got to look at, like, the players here and say, why the hell didn't you show up? And is that a coaching thing? Of course, but, like, it's only, you know, so much there's only so much that the coaches can do, sorry, is what I'm trying to say. The players do start at one point really doing anything up to them. Like, it's not really anything that the coaches can do on the sidelines to change the game. So 6 minutes in, you're done, you're cooked. There's really nowhere you can go, and it was just bad. And I don't really know, honestly, I'm still in shock. I didn't expect the game to go like that. I expected a pretty close barn burner, and I expected a fight, and I was hoping for a fight. I wouldn't have cared if Ohio State won in a last-second matchup, like, but... I still don't know how
you
to feel about it.
It would have ripped your heart out.
But it would have at least been watching a team that was
It wouldn't have been 3 hours of just burying your face in your hands. So.
And trying to question why the hell Oregon didn't show up.
Yeah, and so. Then Vancouver Vortex line. And I'm going to read this, and I think they're right, and I, I'm not taking this as a slight. I'm genuinely not. The Ducks are the highest rated college football team without a ring. I'll give them that. Absolutely. That I think that's without question.
Yeah.
And that for all of the, I don't want this to be like rings culture, because we talk about the NBA and how that's just, you know, been the thing that's brought the NBA down, that you can't have a good season, that things can't be great without a title. Oregon, the thing that is left for them is a title. They've won Rose Bowls in the past. They've had Heisman Trophy winners. They've been to a national title.
Yep.
They've been a part of the big thing. They haven't done the, like, it's the one box that's left. If you're Oregon, that is the bar now. If you want to be a part of that conversation, that is where you have to go. And it was like, oh, you know, this team hasn't done this for, you know, Huskies haven't done it since 91, or USC hasn't done it since 04, 05. And it's like, they've done it. They've done it. Like, that's the thing. It's like, they've done it, though. And you can talk about different eras and what's changed and what's different. They've still ascended. You have not done that yet. And that, like, I don't think this is a Dan Lanning, to me, and what he has done, the culture he has instilled, everything they've brought to this program. I started talking about him probably like week three or four of the season. It's like, there's something different about this team.
Yeah.
And I said, like, I'm buying into this Oregon team more than I've ever bought into an Oregon team, because they were winning in the trenches. And after they beat Ohio State at home and they kept Dylan Gabriel almost spotless clean, was it two quarterback hits in the entire game? I went, oh, man. They went toe-to-toe with maybe the most talented roster, Ohio State, Texas, you know, and they were that team. I went, oh, this is a team. So for them to come out and start that game the way they did, that was surprising. When we get back, we're going to dive into the game itself from the first three plays of the game and all the way through. But first, here's Big Will Betts with the Sports Center update.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080 The Fan.
I was over at a family friend's house taking in the College Bowl action. We got sucked into Texas, Arizona State, like I think most people who are watching did in the country.
Absolutely.
And as it's getting close to Oregon kicking off, it's like, oh, this thing's going to go to overtime. You know, what's going to happen here? Oregon, Ohio State's on ESPN2, and I'm surrounded by people wearing duck clothes. Like, yeah. It's all Duck alums, family members, you know, and I'm sitting there like, okay. Yeah, if you look, guys, I can flip it over to Texas, Arizona State on my phone if you want to start the Duck game. It's fine. Like, no, we want to watch the end of this game. Like, we're not going to miss anything anyways. Well, I had my phone going on the other game, on the Oregon, Ohio State game, and I went, oh no, that was literally what I said. As Ohio State scores in a minute, I was like, oh, this is a problem. This is going to be a problem. What do we do here? And it was one of those situations where I was like, that looked a little too easy. Maybe they just came out of this a little, it happens. You know, you get a big play, you break a big one. It's like,
scripted series to start the game.
Yeah, I mean, that's everything you got, right? That's the goods. So you're just like, that's okay. It's not a big deal. I'm sure Oregon's going to come out and do something too, right? And no, they're not. They're going to go three and out. And I sat there, and by the time Oregon gets the ball, we flipped on to the Oregon game.
Yeah.
Arizona State has lost. And the whole room kind of goes, why isn't he going for it on the fourth and one? And I went, after what you just saw, Ohio State went down and scored in two plays? Jeremiah Smith just took the ball and ran past your defense. You're probably in shock. And as aggressive as Lanning has been, if you go for it there and you don't get it, and all of a sudden that team, it takes over with a 30-yard line, I think they were when they punted.
They were deep in their own territory.
Yeah, it was like the 29.
Yeah, 34. Yeah,
34.
34-yard line. So, like, you give the ball up there, Ohio State scores. I mean, they ended up doing it anyways, but Ohio State scores, I mean, now you're done. Now, Ohio State puts a drive together, but they end up punting. Problem is, Oregon goes three plays, 2 yards when they get the ball back.
Yep.
And they just had nothing. And it was interesting because, as we talked about, that first matchup, Oregon's offensive line looked like maybe the best offensive line in the country. Dylan Gabriel got hit twice in that game in Eugene. And I was stunned because Dusty and I spent I want to say 10 days leading up to that game talking about Sawyer, talking about Simon, talking about JT Tuimoloau, just talking about how freaking insane that front seven for Ohio State was and the challenge that the Ducks faced. And that Ohio State defense was living in Oregon's backfield. And they weren't doing it by sending 5, 6, and 7. They were doing it by sending 4. That was the thing that stood out.
Yeah.
Will, when you saw Ohio State at halftime, as an offensive lineman, you're sitting there seeing Ohio State send 4 and get that much pressure that often. What are you thinking?
Well, it's over. You're going to lose that game. If you're able to get pressure with 4 and drop everyone else back into coverage, you're going to lose. I thought what Ohio State did an excellent job in this game of where they moved Caleb Downs down. He's like not quite in the box, but he's close enough.
Play to that 8-yard.
They went to a 4-2-5, mm-hmm. and in that extra DB, instead of going with an extra like a nickel corner, which is what most teams would do, they went with an extra safety. So that's why they kept saying it's a 3-safety look. And then they just let Caleb Downs be free to play. Like, they didn't make him do anything in particular, but what he did was he just used his high IQ to put himself in the correct spots. And what he was doing a great job of is what the Ducks like to do is they like to run these crossing mesh routes mm-hmm. across the field so that they can get it to Tez Johnson or they can get it to Terrence Ferguson. Well, what Caleb Downs did was he completely suffocated them, and they weren't able to throw the ball there. Dylan Gabriel wasn't, because they weren't open, right?
Downs is in the right spot over and over and over again.
And all that did was give JT and Sawyer that extra half a second to get home. That's all it was. That's the slight difference between getting a pass away and not even getting knocked down, not even getting a hurry, is because Caleb Downs is in the right spot to give those D linemen the time that they needed. And boy, did they hit home. It just felt like no one was open. I felt like at times it wasn't even necessarily like, you give up 8 sacks, sometimes you get beat. But I didn't feel like the offensive line for Oregon, every single sack was their fault. It was at times like,
there's
hey,
a coverage sack.
Sometimes
sure.
that's a coverage sack. Yeah. Sometimes that's a D lineman winning a one-on-one matchup, and you just start compiling. And the more you lose, there seems to be a little bit of a snowball effect of, well, he just beat me there. Like, I got to make sure I don't lose again. And there's a pucker factor, and you're not playing free. And it just slowly started to avalanche where, you know, by the second quarter, it's like, this game's done.
Well, Ohio State's secondary, one of the best in the nation mm-hmm. at limiting big plays. They hadn't given up a passing touchdown coming in since they played Oregon. And I think, yeah, Oregon is the only team that they've given those up against, and they beat them by 20. It's just really, really hard for Dylan Gabriel with no top option open. I'm not sure he was able to hit his top option more than like 2 or 3 times mm-hmm. the entire game. The dude threw like 40-some passes, and he always had to check down somewhere else or looked to run. I think the only successful plays that they really had going into the second half were when he kind of looked like he was about to like dink and dunk and run and then just throw it over to Terrence Ferguson or throw it over the top to Trayshawn Holden. And then that really nice pass to Trayshawn Holden, you know, in the end zone kind of made it look like, okay, maybe they're getting somewhere. But Ohio State just came right back out, and their game plan was just better. They learned from what they did against Oregon, what they did wrong, and frankly, it just didn't seem like Oregon either installed the right game plan after what they did against Ohio State or did not learn from their deficiencies against Ohio State.
I don't really know. I want to see the triage report, as it were, as we, you know, the All 22 comes out and everybody starts diving into it, like just specifically things that Ohio State did that Oregon didn't do and didn't counter, what changes were and weren't made at halftime. Like again, you get the scoring drive before the half, and it's like, well, you know, there's something there. I mean, at least you didn't get skunked in the first half. But the guys for me, that it's 4 guys. Well, 5 if you want to go on the offensive side too. But it's Cody Simon, it's JT Tuimoloau, it's Jack Sawyer, and it's Caleb Downs. Those 4 guys broke Oregon. They broke Oregon.
They came out, and I think it was a total domination from Ohio State. And what I mean by that, like, obviously you can look at the scoreboard and say, hey, that's a domination. Well, guess what? Sometimes there's turnovers. Sometimes there's fumble luck.
It was a clean game. There wasn't that many penalties. There's no turnovers.
Exactly. First penalty was like in the third or fourth quarter.
Yeah, it was a clean game.
It's a clean game. Your first penalty is in the third quarter, and it's a holding penalty. Chip Kelly won against Tosh Lapoy.
Mm-hmm.
Knowles won against Will Stein. And then individual players won individual matchups. It was an annihilation. So it's coaching out-scheming other coaches. And then it's players when Oregon, it felt like, hey, they had something schemed up and they're in the right spot and you get a one-on-one matchup. The player on Ohio State still found a way to make a tackle in the backfield or get a pass stop, a deflection. The Tez Johnson throw, where Dillon Gabriel has Tez Johnson. He has the DB beat by a step. If Dillon Gabriel puts that throw just 2 yards farther, Tez Johnson runs into the end zone. Mm-hmm. I believe at that point it's 14-0.
Yeah.
That's a different game.
No, for sure.
That's all of a sudden, Oregon's back in this game. But Ohio State, they find a way, even though they did it on accident, to get their head in the right spot and make a play. And at that moment, it was just done. Ohio State, they won schematically, and then they won on just pure execution. Hey, it's a one-on-one matchup. You need to go make a play. Emeka Ebuka, he has his arm pinned. The ball literally gets hit by the defensive back, and he brings it in. Tez Johnson isn't able to bring it in when he has a 50-50 ball. Dillon Gabriel leaves it short. Tez Johnson doesn't fight back through it. That's the difference in that game.
There's a lot more to go from this game. We'll hit the ins and outs and all of the in-between and also hear from Dan Lanning here coming up here next on Denny the Fan.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080 The Fan.
All right, last segment this hour, we're going to talk about the Ducks game. We'll pivot next hour to the Texas-Arizona State game and what happened down in New Orleans as well, and talk a little bit of Blazers and probably an hour number three. But one of the things that stood out to me in this game was even when Ohio State was being disruptive defensively, a criticism of Dillon Gabriel that has popped up multiple times this year, for me, I'm sat there and I kept saying over and over again, why isn't Dillon Gabriel running? Why is he not tucking the ball and going? And it's like, I know that Simon was spying quite a few times and Gabriel probably didn't have a lot of places to go, but it was one of those things where I was like, why does Gabriel feel so afraid to take off? He just kept holding the ball and holding the ball and holding the ball. And that's, I think, part of the reason why he was waiting for those plays to progress and break open. But I was like, it feels like he should probably take off. He finishes the game, I think, he had negative 30 rushing yards.
Negative 43.
Negative 43.
That was, of course, because of how they figure sacks in college football.
But I mean, I think it's the right way to do it, to be honest. I think they should have been doing that the whole time.
See, I disagree. I think it's the opposite. I like the way the NFL does it. You're not going for a rush. You just got sacked. Mm. You're not attempting to run, but I hear what you're saying, too. So,
But more than that, how the hell did Jeremiah Smith keep coming open?
I mean, it was pretty interesting. Like, oh, hey, everybody, hey, make sure you're on four. Make sure you're on four. Oh, hey, anybody on four? He just caught the ball. That's kind of how it seemed it went from the start for Oregon.
The deep out where he was triple covered.
Unbelievable.
But not covered.
Yeah.
That was the thing about that. You had the safety over the top. You had the nickel, over the slot. And you had the corner underneath. And I'm sitting there going, why is nobody putting a body on this guy? He's like 6'3", 225 pounds. It's mini Megatron. Go put a body on the dude.
Well, on the first touchdown, that's just a Chip Kelly masterclass.
Yes.
He's got all the eye candy over
the disguising.
Here. He's behind on the backside. It's the perfect man beater. Yeah. Oregon loses him in the coverage.
In the snuff,
and then here's the thing. You have the safety, still has a great angle, and he outruns
just
him.
Just walks by him.
Yep. A guy that big shouldn't move that fast and jump that high.
No. For all of, Jeremiah Smith's really good, and the Ryan Williams is the best 17-year-old player we've ever seen, at Alabama, those things, those narratives kind of got quiet for, I want to say, 6-7 weeks. Jeremiah Smith, if he was in the draft right now, would be the number one overall pick.
I don't know if number one, he'd be the number one wide receiver for sure.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
For sure.
Yes, that's not the number one overall pick. When was the last time we had a wide receiver go number one?
Oh, wow. That's
never.
I don't think we've ever had
that ever happened.
Not even a Calvin Johnson or
no, because he went three. I know, because
this might be the closest you'll get to one.
Which is
the combo.
Yeah,
because it's Travis Hunter.
I would say that Jeremiah Smith is the one piece that's making me say that Oregon's season is still a successful season after going 13-0. If they came in and they got boat raced by guys that maybe weren't as good, I'd probably be a little more upset. I'm still upset as a Duck fan, but knowing that it was Jeremiah Smith that just should probably be in the NFL tomorrow. He could be making a difference in the NFL playoffs like this year. I still can lean on, okay, like Oregon did good. They just hit a freaking brick wall in the talent with, you know, Travion Henderson and Jeremiah Smith as well. It was just too much for them to overcome.
You guys are Duck fans, so I want to give you guys this opportunity. Lanning got killed last year for the Washington games. From what I have seen, I have not seen him getting that same sentiment this time around. Should he be getting killed for it? Like, do you think that there was I've seen coaching staff and I've seen scheme and I've seen play calling, but I haven't seen the same vitriol that I saw for Lanning after the UW game after this game.
I certainly don't think he should be getting it. I think I made the point earlier a little bit that this is on the players more than it is the coaches, in my opinion at least. The coaches can only go so far. Once the clock starts rolling and once the players hit the field, it's on them. If you're not able to execute anything beyond a three and out, if you know you're making the point about Dillon Gabriel not wanting to get out and run, I don't know if that was coaching from Will Stein and Dan Lanning saying, hey, no, hold that in your back pocket. Maybe we're going to save that for later on, and then we'll catch Ohio State off guard. But that was the problem. They never really had a chance to catch Ohio State off guard. And then on top of that, Oregon was in a position that I can't remember them being in for a long time. They were playing from behind. They were playing from on their heels. You know, screw the big moment talk or showing up for the granddaddy of them all. Like, it was a team that has not had to play really from on their heels much outside of like week two or against Wisconsin, which was just because of the weather. And I don't think Oregon was comfortable in that situation. So, no, I think it's more on the players. I don't think Dan Lanning should be getting any crap.
I think he would have gotten more hate if the players were executing, but the scheme was clearly wrong. Like, this was a situation where, yeah, you got out coached because Chip Kelly and Knowles, they had better game plans to attack your offense and your defense than you had to attack Ohio State's offense and defense. But I also felt like when you did get your players in the correct spot, they didn't execute at a high enough level. You had Tez Johnson running away from a DB and your quarterback left it short. And frankly, Tez Johnson should have came back and fought for it. You had a couple drops. You had missed blocks where that's a simple zone concept. You're one-on-one with the defensive end. You can't let JT throw you to the side there as an offensive tackle. So I think if it was one of those where the players were winning, but all of a sudden, like, landing punts on a 4th-and-4, and it was a weird spot where, like, hey, maybe you could come back there, and he's normally aggressive, but he wasn't, and in that spot, like, it was a close game. It was too much of a blot. It was over before it started. I also think what helps Lanning in this situation on why people aren't attacking him is because you did beat Ohio State earlier this year. You did beat, and I know
it's not Michigan, losing to Washington twice.
Right. Yeah. And I know Michigan wasn't as good this year, but you beat him. You still won the Big Ten championship. You beat Penn State. You did something.
You did all the things before that you hadn't done the year before, so there's actual growth.
Exactly. Yes. There's the, hey, look, I can win a big game. I've won these big games. I just ran into possibly a juggernaut. I mean, they're talking about this team as, like, this might be the last great elite team that is built in this way, this deep, I guess is what some might say in the college football ranks.
Yeah, again, last year I think I was on the side of Oregon fan of like, yeah, Dan, like, I get it, you're aggressive, but, you know, there's some things sometimes, you know, you just got to kind of, in the moment, maybe you got to change some things up. But I didn't sit there and bash Lanning after the game last night. I just thought, even more than scheme, the thing that I thought Oregon overcame from, you know, taking on Georgia 2 years ago, where they looked like they didn't have the same level of athlete. Like, you were outclassed. Like, I thought they had overcome that. And in this game against Ohio State, they didn't. And that was, forget the score. That was the thing that was shocking to me. It wasn't that, you know, that Ryan Day out-schemed them, and there's their staff, and it's like this, they really did this. It's like, no, they just said, you know what? We have Jeremiah Smith, and you don't. Good luck. And there was, Chip Kelly got arrogant. Like, that, and I mean that in, like, the most complimentary manner.
Yeah,
like,
as he should have.
He went, try. I was a little bit surprised that Oregon didn't just try. Like, I know they don't normally do this, but I was a little bit surprised that Muhammad didn't just follow Jeremiah Smith as often as put your biggest, best body on him. And
I agree.
Do what you can do. Like, I know, again, it's a lot. It's a tall task, but again, That's kind of what you're there for, is to be that guy. And I'm not beating up Muhammad. I was a little bit surprised that they didn't maybe make that adjustment or at least try it.
I think that might fall under Lupoi's window, unfortunately, of not necessarily being able to adjust. I know that he's a really good recruiter. Yeah. He's been known not necessarily as good of a play caller in game. So maybe that's somewhere where he can improve. But I don't know if that's more on Muhammad or if that's more on him. And as far as the Lanning thing goes, who the hell are you going to go get if y'all are talking about like Dan Lanning, like, you know, holding the blame for this and someone else needing to come in and try to get Oregon past these big games? What? You going to go to Will Stein? You going to go back to Kenny Dillingham? Like what? Brennan Marion down at UNLV or Andy Kotelnicki at Penn State? Like, do you just want to go get like another coordinator? It doesn't make sense to hear from anybody that's like, oh, Dan Lanning can't win in the big game. Oregon needs to find somebody who can. Who's that going to be? Tell me.
That's always the question, you know, is Oregon does like in the triage, and we'll talk about this in the next hour in a little bit. Like what happens now? Because this season's over. You know, it's a bummer for Oregon fan. You know, it is what it is. You went out sad. Like, it sucks.
was bad.
Look, man, even I like to tap dance on Duck Grave, I mean, and have my fun. But even I was like, this is kind of like making a bad joke at a funeral. Like, it was, you know, I'm in a room full of, you know, 10, 12 Duck fans. And I was like, so, we want to flip on something else? Like, I was like, I don't need to watch this anymore. I can catch the highlights, lowlights, whatever later. Like, you know.
I said this to you before the show. I said this last night on the Ducks post-game show. I will go home with my tail between my legs as a Duck fan after that, because that is literally the only reaction that I should be able to have. You got beat. It was bad. No way that you could have won that game, and there's no excuse for it. So go home.
And, you know, I can tell you right now who doesn't have their tail between their legs. It's Kenny Dillingham and Arizona State. Arizona State and Texas fought down to the wire, and the Sun Devils showed they belong. We'll get to that here in hour number two on Danny and Dusty, Danny the Fan.